Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I'm joined by Harry. And I'm Josh, and we are recording this on the day after the Queen has died, which is why I'm wearing a black tie and Harry a black shirt. So if you're wondering, that is why. So yes, we want to be respectful, but also we understand that this isn't going to go out live, so you're going to be a bit confused. But what we're going to be talking about today is the elite. And the language we use when we refer to the elite is often quite vague, and this isn't necessarily helpful when we're trying to talk about them being in the shadows, pulling the strings from behind the scenes, because we want to be able to remove those shadows and see the cause and effect of what's going on, who's doing it, that sort of thing. And obviously this is a massive topic. This is talking about the global elite, so cramming it into an hour and a half is very difficult. So what I've tried to focus on is what is their agenda in particular, and I've divided it into money and power, which are two sides of the same coin, but at the same time, they still are somewhat discrete from one another. They can get different ends, if you will. So obviously, the fact we don't really know how the elite work, how they operate, exactly what their aims are, that's not an ideal thing for our political enemies. So finding out how their agenda works, we can at least work backwards. So we can look at, okay, this is the outcomes they want. Well, let's trace that backwards. And we're not necessarily going to be doing that here, but that's something that I want to do more investigation on once I've set this up, I suppose. So there's also the fact that what do you label what the elites want? Because it's very difficult to put a name on it, isn't it? Is it, as some political theorists say, political capitalism? Is it the World Economic Forum's stakeholder capitalism? Is it neo-feudalism? Is it eco-communism? I mean, there are lots of different options there. I would argue that probably the eco-communism one is not quite as much of a front runner as the others, because communism is, you know, the proletariat owning the means of production, which is kind of the opposite of what the elite would want.
I would say a lot of these terms you're using describe in generally the same sort of idea, though, that of political elites and business elites teaming together against the wishes of the masses.
Yes, absolutely.
To push agendas that will benefit them while hurting others, presumably in an attempt to attain some kind of ideal future, but if those are the stated goals, then we should always be wary of those, because just because it's been stated that way doesn't mean that's what they're actually trying
Absolutely,
to do.
Absolutely, yes.
I would also say that in regards to what you said about, you know, when we talk about the political elites in a vague sense, this actually also does play into the enemy's hands somewhat.
Yes.
Because it's like, I think it was it the New York Post or the Washington Post a few months ago who put out that big hit piece on Tucker Carlson and Tucker Carlson's show that pointed out how he always uses the term they to describe the people. And this has been something that's been a common tactic to try and obfuscate what's been going on for the past 50, 40 years, where people will say, oh, you just keep referring to they, who's they are, you're just paranoid conspiracy theorists. And it's like, no, I know who they are. It's just more convenient to say they instead of list every single, like, Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama, all these people.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to name names when you can. However, sometimes as a shorthand, you just can't avoid it, can you?
No.
But we should try and be as accurate as possible, because that is how best we understand their motives, their aims, and how to fight against them. So I think what's best to start with is the money side of things. And one thing that is certainly on the agenda, but not necessarily the forefront of the political commentary sphere, is the push to not necessarily liberalise, but reimagine what cross-border payments are. And a cross-border payment is just a transfer of money across borders, as you probably could have deduced. So the claims are that the charges are too expensive and it takes too long, which is a real problem. However, the problem is with the solution that is being pushed by the elites. So they're wrapping it up in this sort of skin suit of, this is to eliminate inequality. The fee either has to be reduced or eliminated entirely.
Yes, be wary of elites when they try and solve a problem that is a legitimate problem out there, mm-hmm. because they will try and tell you that they're solving the problem in the most efficient way possible when they're actually just trying to shove their agenda through with it.
Well, it also helps them if they get a real problem and their solution is the questionable part, because anyone that looks at it says, okay, well, that is a real problem and someone's trying to do something about it, and that lends a certain amount of credibility that they've already identified a real problem. So people think in their minds, well, they can't be that stupid, right? Although I don't think it's quite as conscious as that or deliberate as that. But through that association, it then lends a little bit more credibility to their solution, which it wouldn't otherwise have. So things like decentralized digital currencies do solve this problem. But obviously, the elites aren't in favor of these, as we've seen many times about the attacks on things like Bitcoin,
Ethereum, that sort mm-hmm. of stuff. I think the key point there is decentralized digital currencies what they're against. The centralized ones, they're all for.
Mm-hmm. In fact, that is kind of what they're pushing for, a central bank digital currency, which, funnily enough, was what our potential prime ministerial candidate, Rishi Sunak, was proposing, wasn't it?
It was, although I wouldn't be surprised if the Bank of England is still looking to implement something like that.
Yes, exactly. So what this would basically do would centralise power within institutions to control all aspects of money transfer abroad, which from a domestic politics perspective, being able to have control over money flows abroad, well, that is a good thing for controlling people, isn't it?
Mm. And it's also a fantastic stepping point to just start there. You start mm-hmm. with currency exchanges that are happening abroad, and then you bring it domestic, and then you've got control of the whole system.
Mm-hmm. And of course, there are lots of controls on taking money out of the country in places like China, and we can see why that might be. They're obviously trying to preserve their own power, keep money in the country, so it gets spent in China, so it can be harvested up by people who they prefer, pretty much, or themselves. So, yes, the elites want to control monetary transfers, and it's also worth mentioning that political dissidents could more easily have their funds frozen, although it's already relatively easy to do that. It's going to become even easier when it's even more centralised.
Yeah, just look at what, the Canadian government's treatment of the honking protesters this year, being able to freeze all money going to mm-hmm. them, being able to take away the funds that have been donated to them.
And the Bank of England already has a page dedicated to central bank digital currency.
I'm familiar with this page, sadly.
And I'm going to read a little bit from it. We are looking carefully at how a UK central bank digital currency might work, but we have not yet made the decision to introduce one. And I'm quoting here, "The value of crypto assets can move up and down very quickly. They are a risky investment. Anyone buying them should be prepared to lose all their money." That's not really entirely true, is it? Quite volatile. However, you're not going to lose your assets eventually if you wait long enough. It'll come back around.
Yeah, this is the argument that's been made for about 10 years now, mm-hmm. if not a bit longer, where people have just consistently said, well, crypto's just going to crash, crypto's going to crash, it's all going to go down the drain, you're going to lose all of your money. And this year in particular, we have seen some rather striking drops in the value of crypto. But
that's just because the value of everything has dropped.
Yes.
The value of planet Earth is probably lower at this point.
It absolutely is.
So it carries on. How might a UK central bank digital currency work? We already produce digital currency for banks and some other financial institutions to use. These are known as reserves. But we could produce a digital currency that everyone could use. If we issued a UK digital currency, it would be in denominations of pounds sterling. For example, £10 of a UK digital currency would always be worth the same as a £10 note, which is increasingly not very much. They don't say that, though. You'd be able to use it to pay for things digitally. For example, you could transfer an amount of it to make a payment to someone. CBDC, or central bank digital currency, is sometimes thought of as equivalent to a digital banknote, although in some respects it may have been much more common with a bank deposit. It carries on. The final sentence I'm going to read is, any UK CBDC would work alongside, not replace, cash and bank deposits. Interesting that they felt the need to express that. We will continue to provide cash for as long as the public still want it.
Now, this is interesting because the likelihood is it's the elites and their mates that will determine exactly how long the public gets on their time to use mm-hmm. cash, because realistically, it's not the people who choose whether they're allowed to use cash or not. It's the shops that they frequent. And increasingly mm-hmm. More and more since lockdowns, because of the fact that they can shroud it in arguments like, well, over lockdowns, people started using more and more contactless and more card payments going through, less cash payments made than ever. That you can use that as a justification for each of these shops. Like Starbucks is the most recent one that I've seen pushing for no cash to be exchanged in their shops. If you still want to use cash and still carry cash on you, but all the shops don't accept it, all of a sudden you just have to do it, because otherwise how are you going to get the products that you need?
Mm-hmm. There's also the fact that I imagine that long before they phase it out completely, they're going to make it just really inconvenient and just say, well, we're providing the service, however, you're going to jump through more and more hoops to have to pay with cash.
Yes, and you've actually missed out, or maybe you mentioned it in a moment, one of the most worrying things about the page, or maybe it's on a different page, where they point out that your boss might be able to determine what you're allowed to spend your digital currency on. So if your boss thinks that you're spending too much time playing video games on the weekend, then sadly, you're not going to be able to use your UK fun books to be able to purchase anything on Steam for the next few months, perhaps.
It's amazing that this has just been rolled out for general use and not for welfare first as well. Just like, we're going to give you some money that determines what you can buy, and all of the people in welfare are like, damn, yep. I wanted to buy some crack.
I mean, yeah, that's a good point. Actually, welfare is possibly the only place where I could see something like this being appropriate and working, because mm-hmm. otherwise they might just spend all of their money on booze and drugs, for instance.
Yeah, when someone's getting money with the expectation that it's going to go to something else, particularly free money, which I don't even agree with in the first place, it makes a bit more sense that people can set the parameters. But when you're working a job, that money is yours to spend how you wish. You shouldn't have anyone determining how to spend it. And yes, this is obviously just a means of controlling people. And if you control the supply of money, how they use their money, then you have enormous power over them. And this seems to just be ignored by a lot of media outlets, even though this is a lot of the money stuff seems to be the most insidious thing that the elite are pushing. And it really is worrying to me.
Well, it's insidious because people seem to be sleepwalking into it.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, to so many people, because we've grown up in a fiat currency society for as long as most people can remember, and as long as many people have been alive, they only see money as being this kind of thing used purely for exchange. It's just pieces of paper with the queen's face on it, and now it'll be the king's face on it. That you just use, you know, intrinsically it has no value other than what you can buy for it. So that just means that when you do switch from, oh, it's just gone from being paper to being completely digital, most people don't see an issue in that. And they don't see how, you know, back when it was the gold standard and people using actual commodities for exchange, that they had much more freedom in mm-hmm. what they were able to do with that money and how they were able to store and save their money.
Talking about freedom for how you spend your money, let's talk about the introduction of a cashless society, which is further along the line, but is certainly something that is on people's radar a little bit more than that previous thing. And of course, the thing about a cashless society is that all payments can be tracked. So you can monitor political dissidents, people who you don't like, and if they're spending their money in a way that you don't approve of, whatever that might be, then the payments can be cut off. Quite easily.
I think an interesting thing to point out regarding all of this, the idea of trying to change from, you know, the society we currently live in, where we still do use cash, to the cashless society, is that it's kind of an admission from the elites that traditional forms of currying obedience from the masses are beginning to fail. People are starting to see through. People are starting to push back. It used to be that, say, when there was purely a king, in a monarchy, all you had to do was get the people to inspire some loyalty towards that king, and they would mostly do what you wanted them to do. And they, if you were to appeal to this more grand metaphysical notion of the nation as well, that would be able to be enough to get people to, say, go to war for you. Whereas now, I think they recognize that's not going to fly anymore. People don't trust in the nation. People don't trust in the ruling oligarchy the same way that they used to. We've forgotten how to appeal to the metaphysical needs of people, the idea that they want some heroic leader to lead them into sort of a righteous future. We're certainly not getting that with any of our leaders right now. So this is just a more blatant and open form of coercion that people aren't seeing.
Absolutely, yes. And I think that in the case of the cashless society as well, say you have a problem with accessing your payments, which is a deliberate act of the elites, well, it could be presented as a technical issue or a hacking breach or something like that. And because you don't have any knowledge of, you know, your currency once it's out of your control, once it's in the system, well, you're none the wiser. You can't dispute it, really. You just have to take their word for it. So it means that they can steal money from you with impunity, more or less, whilst your accountability to that. Maybe you could have some sort of insurance that you end up having to pay for or something like that. But it seems to me to be a very convoluted way to have more control whilst also getting a nice little payday as well.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is that the payday is going to be questionable to me as well, because there's going to be, even more so than fiat currency, no upper limit, no check on how much money can be flooded into the system using CBDC, which suggests to me that at random intervals, the government, if they notice the population is getting a little bit too rowdy for their liking, can just flood the system with new currency, devalue the currency that people already have, cause massive inflation like we're experiencing right now, at will, whenever they mm-hmm. want, without really affecting the issue their cronies, because you can just put an equivalent amount to the inflation in your buddy's bank accounts, whereas the rest of us all get impoverished. Mm-hmm.
And also they have the ability to invest in things which can keep up in inflation, like commodities and things like that, or say farmland, which I'll be getting onto later. But yes, there's also some slightly less insidious things, but still horribly pervasive, in that you can get more targeted adverts based on your spending history, which would now be complete. You would have all of the money that you spend in one long list, and people can pay for that data from the bank. Many banks will just put it in their contracts where you won't read it, that they have rights to your data and they can sell them on. This happens a lot more than you think. It's why lots of targeted adverts seem spookily prescient. And although people speculate that, you know, your phone's listening in on you, it's not always the case. Sometimes your data has been sold off to a company that's looked at, say, your spending history or your search history or things like that, and they're trying to cater things to you. So it might end up being that the targeted ads are so catered towards people that it could kind of change the dynamic of spending money entirely, in that people will have stuff dictated to them where they spend their money, rather than actually making informed decisions, because the adverts will preempt what they're after because of their spending habits. And that, although it doesn't sound as insidious as the previous stuff, is still very sinister in my mind.
Absolutely. If we do get to a cashless society, the only hope will be for a black market. I'm being serious.
No, I agree, yeah. But it's refreshing to hear the perks of a black market.
There are many. There mm-hmm. are many.
Lower taxes, I mean.
Got one too many kidneys?
Mm-hmm.
Sell that right off.
The funny thing is, black market prices have actually become more and more reasonable now the prices have, because they've not accounted for inflation. They've maintained a steady standard of pricings, divorced from the 20% inflation we're experiencing now.
You heard it here, folks. The black market is more honourable than the free market. Well, free market right
well, it's
now.
It's not a free market.
No, it certainly is not.
But yes, there's also The fact that this could work in conjunction with social credit scores as well to control people's behavior. And I did a whole contemplations, which was number 72, titled The Social Credit System, which I believe we covered as well, didn't we?
Yes, we did. And I'm actually working on a video that's going to be discussing how one basically leads into the other when all of a sudden, because one of the other things that a cashless society would allow would be restrictions on what people are allowed to sell, even more so than we get with regulation nowadays. People could just, you know, if every payment is tracked, that means every payment that you receive as a vendor gets tracked as well. And if you're selling something the government doesn't want you to, then all of a sudden you're not allowed to sell that anymore. Any payments that try and go through for this particular product will fail, which means you're not allowed to do anything with it. So it's not too out of the realm of possibility in my eyes for the government to cut out the middleman, become the sole vendor for all products, like some kind of socialist, all-encompassing total state, and then determine how much money that you get, how much of your digital currency you receive, based not only on job performance, but also on your behavior.
And as we looked at in China, they had a system in place whereby they punished you for social things. So if you were hanging around someone who had a low social credit score, that damaged your social credit score as well. So it's like a self-policing mechanism that if you want to have good credit, then you need to cut out people with poor credit from your life, which is a great way to get people to enforce your will themselves without an authority present, which is very sinister. And they had things like, oh, you can't get a hotel, an umbrella, if you don't have the right social credit score. If you want to rent a bike, you can't do it if you don't have the right social credit score. If you don't visit your parents, you get score deducted, depending on which city you're in. Each city in China had its own policy for what scores you points and what loses them.
Yeah, for those who say that China's at least trying to inspire, I don't know, a more community-orientated, wholesome society through stuff like the, oh, visit your aging parents more often, you know, I think people should be able should be doing that more often without having any real monetary or financial incentive for it. But then you see that, and it's like, well, your friend who you're not allowed to hang out with anymore might just be somebody who disagrees with government methods. They might be a good and wholesome person with many virtuous qualities, but that alone is enough to get them blacklisted from being someone that you should be spending time with in your life.
Absolutely.
So I don't see that as being in encouraging a wholesome society in the slightest.
Well, China's a low trust society, as opposed to Britain, which at least historically was a high trust society, although being flooded with immigration, I don't know how long that's going to last, but we were a high trust society where we didn't need these sorts of things to dictate how trustworthy we were. We just trusted people based on our gut, and it seemed to work. And now I don't think that's possible because there are people from everywhere around the world in our country. So what can we base our judgments on when they don't even speak English, for example? It's seeming more justifiable by the elites to have these sorts of things, even though I don't agree with it. So there are some examples of countries that are introducing an entirely cashless system. Sweden is the main one. Apparently, it's not uncommon to see signs that say no cash accepted in Swedish shops. Apparently, the European Payments Council figures state that cash transactions accounted for just 1% of Sweden's GDP in 2019. So that's pre-pandemic normal levels, so it's probably even worse after the fact. Apparently, cash withdrawals have steadily declined by about 10% per year, and by next year, 2023, they are set to be the first country in the world to become 100% digital, which is terrifying. So,
yes, it is terrifying.
This isn't us scaremongering, it's already pretty much happened in Sweden. So,
but see as well how you can manipulate these statistics to tell the story that you want. The council figures on the 1% of Sweden's GDP being cash transactions. Well, that's a great way of how GDP can be manipulated to basically say whatever it is that the elite want, because GDP also takes into account government spending. And the government, especially in a state like Sweden, which has a humongous welfare state is probably going to take up a massive part of the GDP, government spending.
Absolutely, yes.
And that's not going to be done by cash. That's going to be done by gigantic transfers of billions of whatever their currency is at a time.
Mm-hmm. India has also tried this. Apparently, the government banned 500 and 1,000 rupee notes in November of 2016, which made up 86% of currency in circulation, which is ridiculous. And this was an effort to catch criminals, which seemingly didn't work and just annoyed everyone.
I don't get the logic for that. I don't understand how banning use of particular types of notes is going to stop criminals. They'll just move on to whatever notes are left, obviously.
Yes, this didn't work, funnily enough.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.